Your life is like an egg, that if an egg is broken by an outside force, life ends. But if it's broken by an inside force, life begins.
This is Entrepreneurs the Playbook, where each week I bring you some of the greatest athletes, celebrities, and entrepreneurs to talk about their personal and professional playbook to success.
I love when I get to do a playbook with a friend, and this is Jim Quick. He is actually one of, probably doesn't know it, but one of my mentors. And I always say, you know, how do you get a mentor? It's pick the person that sits in a situation or has experience that you want. And the reason I wanted to have us sit down officially for once is that I've been studying the conscious, subconscious, and unconscious. And I talk about it a lot, and I only know the surface. Not only do you know so much more about the brain than I do, but you've lived it, which was the catalyst for you learning about the brain. You got into an accident when you were young. I think you were trying to look at a fire truck through a window or something.
Good memory.
Is that true?
It is.
And you fell and you hit your head on the radiator and it changed your life. Explain to me at five what that meant to you.
So it's one of my earliest memories that I have. When I had that accident, my parents, they said that I was never the same. You know, it led to a lot of learning disabilities. I hate putting labels on things, but I didn't understand things. I don't know if anyone who's listening to this could relate to this, but when somebody's explaining something to you, like a teacher, they would have to repeat themselves 4, 5, 6 times. And then eventually I would pretend to understand, but I didn't really understand. I had a very poor focus. I had a horrible memory. It actually took me an extra 3, almost 4 years longer to learn how to read, which is embarrassing, right? When you're a child and they're passing around this book in circles, and you have to read out loud. You know, when I got that book, I just, those words meant nothing to me. And so it made me very painfully shy. Like, I was introverted by nature, but shy is another level where it's, at the age of 9, a teacher pointed to me, said, "That's the boy with a broken brain." And that became my label. And, you know, parents and adults have to be very careful because your external words become a child's internal words. So I know you talk a lot about the different levels of consciousness. For me, I recognize that when I wasn't good at something, I didn't do well on a test, which was pretty much all the time. I wasn't picked for a sports team. I would say, it's because I have the broken brain. And that became my internal conversation. And because of that, when you have those issues, you don't feel like you have a lot of value, right? So you don't connect with a lot of people. I talk a lot about superheroes because I would escape. I actually taught myself how to read by reading comic books late at night.
That's awesome.
Something about the hero's journey, something about good versus evil, something about the illustrations gave it life. And I think the fundamental message of all superheroes is that one person can make a difference. And I always wanted to make a difference, but I couldn't even make a difference in my own life. And I think my superpower, if you will, growing up as a child, was being invisible. I didn't want to be seen. I didn't want to be heard. Maybe deep down I did, like everybody wants to be seen and recognized. But because I had this disability, I didn't feel like I had a lot of value, you know, with people.
It's interesting because I've been blessed to be around the world's greatest athletes. And as I've learned your story from your story and have watched you, it really resonated with me because your journey is much like an athlete's, because there's a story that goes on from the time they're young. If they're extraordinary athletes, the world's best. You're an athlete, but you are not a good student, right? You can't learn. And yet the reason I picked my business partner when I spun off from Lee Steinberg, Warren Moon, was my favorite thing about Warren Moon was he was the first athlete that literally just kept asking me questions. And he, not apologetic, first time ever, he just said, "Look, if I don't understand something, David, I'm going to keep on asking you because my mom told me if I don't understand something to keep on asking questions till I do." And we don't ask questions because we get embarrassed.
Right.
And one of my theme songs, my heroic mottos is be more interested than interesting. Ask one more question. Right. And if people would challenge themselves, ask one more question, Dave. And it's so hard. It's a habit that's so hard because you think you know it, or you're so busy trying to tell someone what you think.
Right.
You forget to ask that one most valuable question that could change your entire life or perspective. But you started to read and you started asking one more question. When did that transition, or I call it a quantum shift in your life, happen?
I would say that I do believe, I agree with you, questions are the answer. When people come to me when they have struggles with their brain's performance, they can't learn something. They feel absent-minded. They walk into a room and forget why they're there. They go to the store to buy one thing. They come back with two bags full of things, except for that one thing that they went to the store with. They misplace things: their wallet, their purse, their cell phone, their car keys, or if not their car keys, something larger like their car outside. They forget where they park things. Or they'll read a page in a book and just forget what they just read. They'll meet somebody and get their name, and then the name just disappears out of their mind. Or they feel overloaded with too much to read but too little time. They buy books and they sit on their shelf and become shelf help and not real self-help.
I love that.
And the thing is, I do believe questions are the answer. That, for example, if you aren't learning something, like you read something and forget what you just read, I think a lot of people aren't asking the right kind of questions, because questions are like magnets. Because nowadays, here's the thing with traditional education. If somebody's listening to this right now and they feel like they can't keep up mentally, right? There's too much to learn, too little time. They're drowning information, but they're starving for real practical wisdom. This is why I love your show. And I love the practical advice that you give people, and the inspiration also, because you can't have one without the other. A lot of people feel inspired, but they don't know what to do. Or they get a lot of instruction, but they're not inspired to use any of that, those ideas and those insights. And so I feel like nowadays, we grew up with a 20th century education that prepared us for a 20th century world. I get to coach individuals like Elon Musk and his team at SpaceX, the rocket scientists. And, you know, we live in an age with him, like electric cars and spaceships that are going to Mars. But our vehicle of choice when it comes to learning and education, it's like a horse and carriage. And you wonder why you can't keep up, right? The world is changing so rapidly, but how we learn and apply and read and remember things.
Right. And that's where I really wanted to get to with you, because of my main philosophy of learning is about attention and intention. Mm. So if attention requires why, right? That question, you need, that's what allows you to pay attention. And then we talked about the inspirational side, which is intention. So once I find out, now I have an intent. But I believe that we have the capacity, regardless of what has happened to our brain, to allow things to come through us. So I believe in a processional or a parade, and that what I have to be is aware of what is proceeding through my mind, this parade. And then I want to pay attention to something. I start asking questions, or asking questions so the audience doesn't, because we take things literally. They right. probably are thinking, asking questions is a request for information. So that in our technological days, mm-hmm. that could be a Google search. Right. So there's a lot of ways to ask one more question. So as I'm putting my attention by asking questions or being more interested than interesting, then I have to infuse the inspiration to give meaning.
Right.
Right. Because inspiration is giving meaning to what I see. So I see this big Rose Bowl parade and I pick out the float that I like. I start asking questions or accessing information. The problem with my philosophy and why I really want to ask you is retention. Because I'll go on stage and I'll move thousands of people.
I've seen this.
And I walk off the stage and people are like, oh my gosh. You know, like producers that have been there 30 years. That was incredible. You know, I'd like to see that again. And I'm thinking to myself, I have no clue. I have to go watch the video.
Of what you talked about?
Yeah. You're, through experience, an expert at understanding how the brain can retain and access that same information, where I believe my expertise allows in the processional and the intention and attention, but I haven't really grasped the knowledge because I have so much going on in my life. I wish I could remember everybody's name, for example.
Sure.
Tell me a little bit how that works.
Yeah, I will. So there's different aspects. And first of all, let me acknowledge how you go into flow states is astonishing, whether I've seen you on video or I've seen you live on stage. Wayne Dyer had that same effect.
He's my mentor, right?
Yeah.
Is that credible?
And he wouldn't, I've had the opportunity to also share stages with him and ask him how he preps. He does no preparation. It just channels right through him also as well. And so I think it's a real superpower. When I'm looking at memory, part of it is questions, actually. I have a framework I call MOM, M-O-M. It's kind of like the mother of all, like the principles, if you will. And if somebody's forgetting something, in any context, they're learning something and they're just forgetting it. Because people don't realize there's a learning curve, but there's also a forgetting curve. They say that when somebody goes to a conference or they read a book or they listen to a podcast, within 2 days, 48 hours, up to 80% of it is gone. You know, and so that's not a great return on your investment. You're putting all this energy and effort and focus and losing most of it. So the M in MOM, let's say we're applying it towards... Now, by the way, when people are asking, they come to me all the time saying, Jim, I wish I had a better memory. You know, how do I make my memory better? Better? And that's the equivalent of somebody going to a coach and saying, how do I be better at sports? You know, right. It's pretty generic. Like, what sports specifically? Because there could be a different technique for remembering names and learning a language to giving. I train a lot of actors how to memorize their lines, or a lot of TED speakers how to give speeches without notes. So the M in MOM stands for motivation. All right. And so this is what I mean by motivation is a lot of people are forgetting because they have there's no incentive. Right. And so, and that's something you can't give to somebody. Right. I feel like a good coaching client, you know, whether it's from a parent to a child, a teacher to a student, you know, a leader to their team, they can't make somebody motivated, you know, long term, sustainably. And so if somebody comes to me, I'm looking for two qualities, both they're motivated and also they're teachable. Mm-hmm. Right. Because if someone can be motivated, but not teachable.
I call it potential and willing to do the work. Ooh, for my business.
I love that so much.
If you have the potential, which means the motivation.
Right.
And two, if you're willing to do the work,
right.
Do what I say. Right? If you're not going to listen to me, if you're just an interrupter, I'm screwed. I'll never be able to teach you anything.
And this listening is very important also, because that would be I'll tell you what the O stands for in a moment. But motivation is something like you're meeting somebody for the first time. A lot of people aren't really motivated. Here's the thing though, genius leaves clues. Right? I feel like you are your own expert. It's not always the person you're watching on video or on stage who writes the book. You are an expert at you. So genius leaves clues, meaning you don't remember all names, but you don't forget all names either. Right. And so what's the method behind the magic? When somebody does something, when I'm on a stage, I'll have 100 people stand up and I'll memorize all their names. They'll give me a 100-digit number, 100 random words. I'll memorize them forwards and backwards. But I always tell people, I don't do this to impress you. I do this to express to you what's really possible. Because the truth is, every single person watching this, listening to this, could do that and a lot more, no matter your age, your background,
and
your
it is
career.
Motivating. Like, I love, not to interrupt, because hold on, I know you won't forget MOM, but I don't have to worry about you forgetting what you're going to say. But for me, it's so motivating because I teach, right? If you think of something as a possibility, when you become inspired, it's a probability, and then you have to take action to make it your perspective or your reality.
I love that.
You live by that, and I sit there going, I love when people, their reality surpasses my imagination. And I try to be that guy. Like, I remember in law school, one of my professors, I told him how I snuck into Bolshoi Ballet in Athens and went with the band and, you know, the orchestra, sorry, you know, Walker. And he said, oh, you're full of it, David. And I said, it's so sad, professor, when my reality surpasses your imagination. That's when I watch you.
Interesting.
I think to myself, I have the same brain. Mine wasn't even injured. Maybe it was, but I could do this.
Everybody could do this. And the science is saying right now, it's generally accepted that 1/3 of your is predetermined by genetics and biology, but 2/3 is in your control, which is astonishing. Now, some people say all of it is in your control, depending on epigenetics and everything. And yet there's things that we're just not taught how to do it. Your brain is this incredible tool, the most powerful device in the universe, but nobody shows, it doesn't come with an owner's manual. And we know this, but the M in MOM stands for motivation, meaning what is your motive for action? Ask yourself. So here's the thing, going back to genius leaves clues, you don't remember all names, but you don't forget all names. So where was what happened there? What was the principle? So we tend to remember names of people we're attracted to. We tend to remember the names of people that could be good for our business. So notice it's there, and you could create that artificially or just genuinely, but just asking yourself a new question. I mean, I think this conversation.
Do you think that's connecting emotionally? Like
it is.
The name is what I connect emotionally to.
Part of it, because that's the thing. I believe there's a success formula. I call it H-cubed, head, heart, hands, that people could visualize things in their head. They could set goals and KPIs in their head. They could have affirmations in their head and law of attraction in their head. But if they're not acting with their hands, they're not going to get the result. Mm. And then, so what's missing is usually the second H, which is the heart. And what's the heart symbolize? Feelings, emotions, right? We know people don't buy logically, they buy emotionally, right?
People buy an emotion for logical reasons.
Exactly. And because we're not logical, we're biological. I mean, you think about the dopamine, the oxytocin, the serotonin, the flood of endorphins. And so like sales is just a transfer of emotion, right? Especially if there's bonding and there's trust, there's rapport. And so that's why people do things. But where's the emotion when people are remembering someone's name? There's usually not. There is if they want to remember it inherently. So just you could build that up by asking yourself a question. Like, why do I want to remember this person's name? Maybe it's to show the person respect. Maybe it's to practice these things I learned from this podcast. Maybe it's to make a new friend, whatever it is. Because here's the principle. Reasons reap results. If you can't come up with one reason to remember someone's name, you're not likely to remember it, right? And so motivation is really key. Even in learning in general, like most people don't apply what they learn. And that's the other thing. My biggest gripe with the personal development industry, high performance industry, is there's this myth, there's this lie that knowledge is power, which is total BS.
I agree.
Right? Knowledge is not power. It has the potential to become power, but it only becomes power when we apply it. Right? But people think that buying a book or just listening to it, or just because they can repeat your sayings and your quotes, that makes a bit of a difference.
Right.
Right. And I don't feel like it's, people don't understand it unless they could do it.
Just for me, I was taught, and probably is a limiting belief now for me, is that you have a forefront of your brain can handle 5 to 7 things. That's why we forget stuff. Right. And I think I bought into that where it was like, well, I can't remember everyone's name because I meet more people than almost anyone
sure,
I know.
Certainly.
Just because of my lifestyle and what I do. And I think I've limited myself by believing that my brain only has so many gigs of memory.
And here's the thing. It's a complete lie. And it's something that's been, you know, I think the nature of our work for you and I and so many people listening is about transcending, ending the trance. It's this mass hypnosis that's out there through media, through marketing that says we're broken, that we need to be fixed, that we're not good enough, right?
It's a scarce belief.
Exactly.
In the universe,
and right? It comes through all these different areas and we feel like, but the truth is there's no such thing as a good or bad memory. There's a trained memory and untrained memory, but it's not taught in school. School taught you to consume information, right? School taught us, you know, it was at the turn of the 20th century, it was to work in factories and farms, to take simple orders, right? Not to think for yourself. School taught us important subjects on what to learn, math, history, science, but no classes on how to learn, like how to think for yourself. I taught just what to learn and what to think, but not how to learn and how to think. So where was the classes on how to concentrate, how to focus, how to solve problem, how to build a business, right? How to be able to listen, you know, with empathy, emotional intelligence. Where's the classes on how to read, you know, faster, retain more? Where's the classes on remembering? You know, there are 3 R's in school, reading, writing, arithmetic, which is not spelled right, obviously. But what about retention? What about, Socrates says, learning is remembering, because like, there is no learning. You could go out and go to an event, spend all this money or get coaching, but if you're going to forget it the next day, then, you know, what power do you have? And in today's world, knowledge is not only power, it's profit. And I don't mean just financial profit. That's obvious, right?
Abundant.
Nobody, yeah, exactly. Nobody who's listening to this, you're not paid for your brute strength solely. You're paid for your brain strength. That's the economy we're in. You're not compensated for your muscle power. It's completely your mind power. And the faster you can learn, the faster you could earn. And especially in this world of fast-paced change, you know what the half-life of information is nowadays out of school? I mean, they say, I read recently that the average graduate's going to have anywhere from 8 to 14 different careers. Not different jobs, different careers because right. Who knows where the world's going to be 10 years from now.
Which is why I look at life, and I think this complements your philosophy with a lens of productivity and accessibility. And the accessibility is a two-way, this is the throughput that I believe in, is that how quickly can I access the information and then allow it to be accessible to others?
Exactly. And then so going back to the drive of the importance of questions, which you introduced in this conversation, I think questions really are the answer. So it's asking yourself, why do you want to remember this person's name? Why do you want to learn this? Because reasons reap results. Reasons reap rewards also as well. It's like even taking knowledge to action. I did a whole podcast on this. There's 3 questions I ask obsessively because that's all thinking is. Just the process of asking and answering questions of yourself, that you're talking to yourself and you're getting clarity on things. So there's 3 questions I obsess about all the time because me growing up with a boy with a broken brain, I'm always thinking, how do I make this better? All the time because that was the situation I was in. But 3 questions I ask all the time if people want to get more, take knowledge and turn them into action, because a lot of us procrastinate, we put things off, we self-sabotage. I ask myself, first of all, how can I use this? I mean, I am 1,000 times a day when I'm going through life, I'm thinking, how can I use this? And then once I have that question, you know, I'm answering that, I'm asking, why must I use this? I go back to the why, which is the second H, which is the heart. Mm-hmm. Why must I use this? Because I know if I don't have reasons, I'm not going to do that action. I'm going to procrastinate, put things off, right? And then the third question is, after I ask, how can I use this? And then why must I use this? I ask myself, when will I use this? Because if it's not scheduled, it doesn't happen.
That's a transference into this vibration, in my opinion.
Exactly.
Right? Until you ask when, it's ethereal.
Exactly.
Right? We live in a 24-hour time frame. When you say when, now you put it into the context of reality.
And I think our calendars or on our phones or whatever, how we keep it, that's one of the most important performance productivity tools
there
is.
Student in your calendar.
Exactly.
Your calendar.
Because here's the thing. If it's not in your calendar, it's not going to happen. And you got to treat that time as time like with your boss or time with your investor, time that you wouldn't compromise.
And the white space of the calendar. I tell people all the time, I study my calendar and I've really focused in the last 2 years. I study the white space of my calendar. What am I doing when I don't have something scheduled? Right, that calendar, then it's a transfer is from that, you know, I have a little different order. I believe in what, why, how,
sure,
then when. And the when, that transfer is from, okay, how am I going to do this? The when, nobody gets. Like, they don't understand that these ideas vibrate so much faster. That's why, like, with full awareness, you could win the lottery every time. Right? It's proven. That data exists. Right? Wow. You can, with full awareness, you vibrate fast enough. I believe with full awareness, you'll know what's going to happen. Time. But in order to live here, we have to have a transfer is using when into this reality of a lower vibration. Speaking of which, awareness, this word to me is a gift. And yet I am challenged to say I know 30 or 40% of what it truly means. How does awareness play into the brain?
Well, I would actually, that's a great segue because the O in MOM, right? We're talking about the three principles of memory.
I knew you wouldn't forget what we were talking about.
No, this is perfect. The O in MOM stands for observation. And I do a lot of training for like situational awareness with law enforcement and such. But I really do believe when people blame their memory challenges on their retention, it's not your retention, it's your attention. Do you know what I mean? Yeah. A lot of people, they're not forgetting the name. They're just not hearing the name. And when you're meeting new individuals and you meet so many new individuals, a lot of people, when you know this, when you go to events, they're not really paying attention. They don't have that awareness because where their awareness is going is actually looking over their shoulders, thinking who else is important, who's more important in this room,
right?
If they're honest, or their awareness is inside instead of actually paying attention to that person they're meeting and listening to them. They're thinking about, they're not listening. They're waiting for their turn to speak,
right?
Or they're not listening.
Waiters.
Exactly.
And then processors.
And then, or they're thinking about how they're going to respond. And, you know, Stephen Covey, great book, Seven Habits of Highly Effective People, seek first to understand, then to be understood, right? Seek first to understand them, then to be understood by them. And people don't care how much you know until they know how much you care. And we know this, right?
Right. But elevate others to elevate yourself.
Exactly. But how are you going to show somebody you're going to care for their business, their future, their health, their finances, their family, whatever it is you're selling them, if you don't care to remember their name? Because what's the meta message we send to somebody when we forget their name and ask three or four times, right? That they're not important, that we don't care.
Right.
And it doesn't matter what happens after that, right?
And everyone has enough insecurities that it just plays into their biggest fears.
Exactly. And this is going back to emotions and feelings, right?
Ego, right?
Maya Angelou said, people won't remember what you say. They won't remember what you did. They'll always remember how you made them feel. Right? So it's always back to feelings. So the O in MOM stands for observation. And a lot of people, they're just not present. Right. When we're talking about awareness, you know, like right now, there's 2 billion different stimuli we could be aware of. Right. Primarily, people don't realize your brain is a deletion device. It's trying to keep this stuff out. Right. And maybe you can only consciously in terms of this front lobe here, pay attention to 5 to 7 plus or minus 2 bits of information, according to George Miller at Harvard. So 5 to 9 bits. So if I give you a list of 30 words to memorize, or you meet 30 people, maybe you'll remember 5, 6, 7, 9 of those individuals in terms of your conscious mind, what you can pay attention to, unless you have some kind of strategy to chunk it and to use more of your nervous system to make it easier for yourself. But the O is observation. Yeah. And then finally, the last M in MOM stands for the mechanics. And those are the skills, the techniques, the strategies on how to learn a language faster, on how to give a presentation.
And that's what you
without
teach.
Notes. Yeah, so that's what we have in our podcast. That's what we have in our online programs. But I'm saying, like, if you don't have the motivation to remember something or want to learn something, and if you don't just pay attention. And by the way, good memory training really is the art. The art of memory is the art of just being present and the art of attention, right? So even if the M is motivation, which is caring. The O is observation, which is just being present with somebody. And that's just being a good human, caring and being present with somebody. And you're going to retain a lot more.
It's so interesting that motivation, inspiration, energy is always that inanimate, true factor. Like, it's the X factor. I market the Pro Football Hall of Fame and I always laugh. How come every person in the Pro Football Hall of Fame isn't the biggest, strongest, and fastest person that was drafted number one?
Right.
Why is that? Because of that X factor, right? John Brink is from Sports Science, right? Has a new show and he wants to create the science of momentum, which I'm really interested in, which is really where you are playing right now, is how do we reconcile these great mechanisms that you understand far more than most people, but you're the only one that I know that adds in the intangible factor, the X factor of, Dave, all of this doesn't matter unless you have momentum, motivation, inspiration, this emotional side of things, which to me is my extraordinary quest to pursue the potential of myself through motivation. And it's interesting because both of us, through different things that happened in our lives, mine at five as well, right? My dad leaving, six kids, like it was an emotional thing that I really tied into the emotional. You went introvert, I went extrovert.
Interesting.
Right. And, you know, I joke around with, cause I deal with a lot of techies and, you know, what I call more geeky guys, which is more popular now, especially in the sports industry with esports, right? Just wait. More people will know the greatest, you know, ninja than LeBron very soon. But I always joked around saying, you know, when a geeky guy or an intellect is extroverted, he looks at your shoes when he talks to you instead of his own. But you've advanced. All right. Unfortunately, this is a shorter podcast, but we're going to continue these conversations. Last question. If our listeners are out there, what's the best piece of advice to maximize your brain potential?
Yeah. I'm going to riff on this because there are quite a few things.
Please.
I want to add him as much value as possible.
Please.
I was doing a training for an actor in Hollywood, Jim Carrey. He was preparing for...
Never heard of him, but I'm sure he's good.
He's preparing for a role, Dumb and Dumber. And he was like, Jim, I'm going to get really super smart before this.
For Dumb and Dumber. Yeah. And how ironic.
We're at his home and we're in the kitchen making... it was guacamole, which is, by the way, great brain food. We did a podcast episode on the top 10
brain foods. Right,
you
do foods too, right? Yeah.
And I always ask people about their drive and what drives them to do what they do. And because I believe genius leaves clues, and a great conversation with somebody could be worth as much as, you know, going to any conference or book or anything. And he says, Jim, the reason why I act so extreme and I act like sometimes like a complete ass on camera is because I want to give people permission to be themselves. You know, it's so interesting. I do believe that you talked about in the beginning the fear of making mistakes and that how that inhibits and limits us. And he says, I want to free people from concern, the concern of others. Because I believe we could go broke if we buy into the concerns and opinions of other people, their expectations. And when we die, and it's a kind of a morbid conversation, it's not very inspiring, but, you know, again, begin with the end in mind. You know, when we're taking our last breaths, or we are in that casket, there's no room in there for regret, right? And I spent a lot of time, my grandmother passed away of Alzheimer's, and I spent an inordinate amount of time in senior centers, not teaching them memory techniques and everything. You know, I speak at the Cleveland Clinic for Brain Health of the researchers and caregivers and doctors, certainly with lifestyle and prevention, but just having them share their stories because they have worlds of experience, right? And so that wisdom is so precious to me. But it also polishes off their memories. But I also noticed the big regret people have at the end of their life is they were living somebody else's life, you know, based on other people's truth, not their own truth. Mm. And I would say to be a quick learner, to be a faster learner, one of the best ways is to free yourself, you know, from the power we give to sometimes our positive peer group is so important. Right, you know this. We're the average of five people we spend the most time with. If you spend time with 9 broke people, be careful because you're going to be number 10. We've all heard this, but the neurological reason is because we have these mirror neurons. And your mirror neurons in your nervous system, what they do is they imitate. So when you're watching a game, you could feel what the quarterback is feeling, or watching a movie, because you have empathy. And that's what is driven by your mirror neurons. And that's why children learn so quick and everything. But also, their mirror neurons is also adopting the beliefs and the values and the attitudes and the habits of the people around you. So it's not just your neurological networks, it's your social networks. And so what I would say is it's very important to be conscious of who you spend time with, because that's why you become those individuals. And going back to this, it's very important because freeing yourself from the concern of your peer group too, because a lot of people, and you know this, that some of the people that hold you back are the people that are closest to you. And they have opinions about things, and
then we resent them when we get what they wanted for us,
which is horrible, right? Because here's the thing: it's they could be sincere, but they could be sincerely wrong, and that's the thing, because we give up our sovereignty to them. So I think it's very important, going back from freeing yourself from the concern and expectations of other people, just to be very conscious of that, because it's hard to live your truth. Because the truth is, if we're talking about transcending and ending the trance, that people who are listening right now, they have genius inside of them. I've said this decades ago, but your life is like an egg, that if an egg is broken by an outside force, life ends. But if it's broken by an inside force, life begins.
That's awesome.
All great things begin on the inside. And everyone who's here, you have greatness inside of you. You have genius inside of you. And now is the time to get rid of this trance, this hypnosis, and be able to let it out. And that's really the goal, is to change the identity of individuals. My mission, because I grew up with a boy with a broken brain, is literally to build better, brighter brains. Because this controls what? This controls everything.
And so it controls your perspective, which
exactly.
is everything.
And the thing is it's not fixed like your shoe size. And that's the biggest myth. We've discovered more about the human brain more in the past 10, 20 years than the previous 2,000 years. And what we found is we're grossly underestimating our own capabilities. And that's the thing. So just my thing with everybody, the techniques are easy, right? That's what we have a podcast. It's only 15 minutes long. It's very short, bite-sized brain hacks on how to learn a language, how to remember names, how to read a book a week, how to change your habits. But it really starts with knowing you have this greatness inside of you, and also believing in yourself. Because here's the thing, like if you look outside and you see a bird on that tree, the bird is not confident because it puts its trust in that tree branch. It's confidence because it puts its trust in its own wings. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And that's what I'm saying, is that people who are listening to this, you've been lied to. Like, it literally is, we've been lied to in terms of our own potential. And I'm not saying there was this mass conspiracy or anything else like that, but I'm just saying, look at your truth. I feel like for me, in order to be truly happy and fulfilled, you need two things. You need the curiosity to know yourself. Self-awareness, going back to awareness.
Yep.
And I feel like that's why we're here. That's why we journal. That's why we meditate. That's why we have relationships, because they're a mirror to who we are. But once you know yourself, you also need the courage to be yourself. And that's a different game.
Way harder.
Way, way different game, because a lot of people, what they're doing is they're mitigating who they are because they don't want to make mistakes. They don't want to look bad.
They want to be loved by everyone. They want to
exactly,
please people.
Because if they make mistakes, they're fearful, they're failure, or whatever it is. But you know this because of your life experience. Failure is not the opposite of success. It's part of success. Right?
It's the road
and
to
people
it.
Are so, exactly. And who doesn't? Because that, and there's no failure. There's only failure to learn. There's only feedback, right? Yeah. But people need to make their mistakes. They're afraid to make mistakes.
And they're afraid to ask questions.
Exactly.
Because
that,
people
going back
think
to
they're
questions.
Stupid, but then you don't ask questions and then you become stupid.
Exactly. And so that's the thing. Going back, that's the power of questions with everything we talked about. Asking questions, why do you want to remember the person's name? Asking questions like, how am I going to use this? You know, why must I use this? You know, when will I use this? Questions become the answer. And I think going back to this, when we're talking about transcending and getting to another level of growth, you need to do the hard things. Like success, like...
Consistently.
Exactly. And consistency. And here's the difference for me. It's if you're persistent, you'll get it. But if you're consistent, you'll keep it.
Yeah. And if you're consistent, it is the precursor to persistence.
Exactly.
You cannot, I tell people all the time, you can't be persistent unless you're consistent.
Right.
Right. And that's why I have the consistent, persistent pursuit of your potential. That's
I love
happiness
that.
To me, right? If I can
that.
Enjoy that, and that goes through all the realm of our body to mind.
And my
soul.
Suggestion to everyone who's listening to this is be consistent with their learning, because it's like for example, I think leaders are readers, right? The average person reads a couple books a year when they should be reading at least one book a week.
Is it different to read than to listen? I'm going to go way over.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Is it different to read than to listen?
I love listening.
Yeah.
But notice how you could listen at 1.5, 2x, and
I listen to
faster.
3x, right?
3x, exactly.
I speak too fast.
And that's, by the way, separate from a totally as a tangent, but very related to this. If people want to read faster, the biggest obstacle to your reading besides focus is the sub-vocalization. Mm. Sub-vocalization, sub meaning under, vocal meaning speech. That's your inner speech. You ever notice when you're reading something to yourself, you hear that inner voice inside your head reading along with you?
Right.
Hopefully it's your own voice. It's not like somebody else's voice. Right. The reason why it keeps you reading slow is if you have to say all the words inside your mind to understand it, you can only read as fast as you can speak. Mm. To say it another way, that means your reading speed is limited to your talking speed, not your thinking speed. That's why you can listen to audiobooks at 2x, 3x, because you could process that fast. You just can't speak that fast. But the truth is, you don't have to pronounce words to understand them. You don't have to look at a word like computer and pronounce it, or New York City, mm-hmm. because you've seen those words hundreds of thousands of times. And so they're what they call sight words. So we did an episode on our podcast, how to reduce or eliminate sub-vocalization, nice. You know, because it just makes you faster. But these are the things we weren't taught, because last time you took a reading class, which is a skill, you're what, 6-7 years old?
Yeah.
And then that's how people are reading, going back to this. But
that's
again,
bad for the guy with the broken brain.
Right.
I can read fast.
But here's the thing, is just going back to this, in order to be really happy and fulfilled, I was doing this training, I'll end with this. I was with Will Smith, and and he never was filming
him either, but that's cool. There's a lot dropping and, on this and, show.
Yeah, but I'm
I don't know what it is. But I'm doing a bunch of big names. I'm usually the guy dropping names.
But I'm
Stop
doing
it,
this.
Jim.
But I'm doing this for not for ego reasons. No, really for memory. They're triggers because what'll happen is we remember things through reminders. And next time you see Will Smith on Instagram or you watch him, you know, one of his films, it'll remind you, oh, that was the lesson. Right?
Cool.
Because if I mention Bob Smith, people are like, oh.
Yeah, exactly.
So, but we were on set and he was filming from 6 p.m. to 6 a.m. And I was like, okay, genius leaves clues. I'm like, how do you, you're just waiting here. And then somebody says, okay, we're going to shoot at 2 a.m., right?
Yeah.
Like, how do you get ready? And he was like, Jim, I don't get ready. I stay ready. And I was like, wow, it's good to be Will Smith. But my point is like that preparation is so important that you do the hard stuff. Like when you do the easy thing, which is procrastinate, put things off, life is hard. But when you do the hard stuff, life becomes easy.
Yeah, the universe loves simple. And like it really Ferris does. Says, right? I look for easy. I love it. Well, we're going to do this again.
Yeah,
this
of course.
You reached my goal. Your goal was to have the best podcast, and I will rank it right now. I mean, Aubrey Marcus was up there.
Amazing.
It was like, boom, right? I'm just blown away.
Thank you.
Your name, Jim Quick, represents how quick I've just, you're processing stuff. And if you're not listening and learning from Jim, you're missing out, and it's a blessing to have you on this podcast.
I appreciate it.
This is what the playbook's about, right?
Can I challenge all your playbook listeners?
Yeah.
I would challenge everyone to do this. The last thing I would say to accelerate your learning is to teach. You know, I feel like intention, going back to power of intention, we teach the thing that we need to learn. And also, I feel like when you teach something, you get to learn it twice. And so I would challenge everyone to rewatch or re-listen to this episode and then and have somebody in mind when you're listening to it, to be able to help their life and then play it forward, right?
Inspire them to teach, so empower
exactly.
Others.
And one of the things at the very least people could do is take a screenshot of this episode or this video, post it online, tag you, tag myself at Jim Quick, K-W-I-K, and share your big aha with all your friends. Because when you do that, then it becomes not our, it becomes yours. You own it, right? And I think that's one of the best ways to learn something faster.
I agree. And I also just want to thank you because my biggest lesson, I have four kids, as you can see them over here to my right, and my three teenage daughters, I keep telling them, this is one of the most enlightened individuals, girls, show me your friends and I'll show you your future. Just think you're that next one. So we'll do this again. It's been an honor and a privilege to have you as a friend, let alone on the playbook. So thank you so much, Jim.
Appreciate it, David.
This is Dave Meltzer with Entrepreneurs, The Playbook.